One of us is going to have to edit it out, or we'll just give it to him.
Tim!
Yeah, we'll get Tim to do it and be like, hey, you guys didn't take the time. We got this. Yeah. We got this recording.
You play D&D.
Yeah, you, that's Brian. Brian's doing his nerd thing. All right. You ready?
Yes.
All right, Burn fans. Thank you for joining us. And a little bit of a tangent, or what you call it, an extra, but we're going to call this Cocktails and Comics, or Comics and Cocktails, but it's essentially just us getting together to just talk comic stuff and what's kind of going on in current comicdom, as well as, you know, reflect back on anything that has to do with comics or TV shows or movies. It's just really meant to be a relaxing hour together with you, you know, talking about comic stuff, which, of course, if you're listening to this, you must be interested in comic books. And joining me is John Hyatt. John, say hello.
Hey, everyone. Hi, David.
Hello. So we got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about today. Hopefully, this will be an ongoing extra to Third Degree Burn that you all will like, and kind of rotate out folks as they have time to just hop on the old Skype machine and talk some comic stuff. So first, I figured we'd talk about, you know, what's probably top of mind for everybody, which is COVID. And if you're following the news right now, and this will give you some idea of when we're recording this, still running rampant. And now we've got a brand new variant, John, that is like 60 or 70% more transmissible than the old one.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. Where I live in Southern California, we just had our first case diagnosed with it. And that person says they didn't travel anywhere. So how they got it, don't know.
Right. Which,
yeah,
I know this has been running our lives for, you know, well, it's coming up on close to a year, which is part of the reason maybe why we have cocktail in hand, which I will say I have my usual drink of choice, which as a parent and having two young children, this helps keep me sane. I have my Crown and Dr. Pepper. John, what will you be indulging in tonight as we chat?
I am enjoying rum and coke.
Ooh, another classic.
Yeah. If I could make a Harvey Wallbanger, I'd have one of those, or a whiskey sour. But
maybe for next show.
Next show. But listeners, lovely listeners, you can have your drink of choice. It might not be a cocktail. It might be a regular Diet Coke or glass of milk. Just join us.
Yeah. And if you're listening to us in the morning, hopefully you're not drinking a Crown and Dr. Pepper. You're enjoying this and having a cup of coffee.
Like a cup of tea or coffee. Exactly.
Right.
If it was in the morning, like when we normally record, I have a nice big cup of coffee.
As do I, yeah. So a little behind the scenes. Normally when we're together, we're recording this on Sunday mornings. You know, our regular Third Degree Burn show. And this is being recorded on a weekday night, 10:30 my time. So that's, what, 8:30 for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's late in the evening for those of us together. But back to the COVID. So there's light at the end of the tunnel. And I my wife and I usually have our, you know, nightly debrief. And I keep her up to date on the news, because she just can't handle even watching it. You know, between the political stuff, COVID, right? And then we had also the bombing in Nashville, right? The guy exploding his RV, and they're still trying to figure out, you know, what his motives were behind it. She's just completely like, I don't want to have anything to do with it. So you can give me the highlights and what I need to know. I'm fine to do that. But we've got a couple different vaccines. You know, we've got a little bit of disappointing news that the AstraZeneca one will not be, or they're hoping to have it available by like April. But the Johnson & Johnson one, they're saying February. So that's good news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we already got, and we have two out already, the Pfizer and I forget the name of the other one, but
The Moderna.
Moderna, yeah.
So we're getting there.
Yep. And I have a couple of friends who are deeply involved in medical stuff, and they've got their first doses and so far reporting good stuff.
Good.
So they're excited about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But related to that, we have very, very sad news today. We lost our beloved Marianne, actress Dawn Wells from Gilligan's Island to COVID today. That's very sad.
She brought
a lot of cheer and joy to people over the years, including myself. Since I got, I used to watch that show in reruns after school every day in the 70s. And
it was still on reruns when I was a kid, and I watched it as well in the 80s. Yeah, and it's really too bad, right? It's as I've tried to explain to some friends and family, it's you just don't know with this one, right? You have perfectly healthy people, which we just had the congressman elect from Louisiana, 41 years old, so same age as me, and he announced on December 18th that he had tested positive but was feeling okay and was at home. And then by the 23rd, he was admitted to the hospital. They gave him that Redeemer, or whatever that weird. It's like Redeemer, but they of course give it the pharmaceutical spelling, as well as steroids. And by the 29th, he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible. You know, so it's terrible, right? So you know, here's two ends of the spectrum, right? Someone that's 82, which you kind of put into that high risk category, right? Really not someone you want to get it, right? Because it's not, chances aren't great at that age. But we have seen a lot of people recover. Unfortunately, she didn't. We lost her probably earlier than we would have. And obviously, this younger guy, the congressman elect at 41, and he died. So just kind of a sober reality of. Wear your mask, wash your hands, use hand sanitizer, because you just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and avoid, being out with crowds of people.
We Biden got a lot of heat for saying that, we had some dark days ahead of us, but based on, what did they say, 1.3 million or something people traveled for Christmas? I pray for them that, everybody was safe and did all the right things, but that's probably not going to end up well. And with that kind of ties into comic stuff, because COVID has really thrown so much of the publishing, into, just delays and things that were going to be released, not being released. And I should say, for those that maybe haven't listened to Third Degree Burn, we brought it up a couple times, but my wife and I have a small business and we run a comic shop. When COVID started, it just kind of threw everything into a loop because as background, so Diamond pulled the plug on publishing anything. I think it was around March or April?
It was really quick. So I don't think we got any books until, was it late May when they finally started shipping them again?
Yeah, it was about 45 days or so where there just was no books coming out. And a lot of that had to do with, obviously, the country was in kind of rolling lockdowns, including comic shops, right? I mean, this was the unknown, right? Everybody was trying to figure out how to adjust to this, right? Can we even get books? And if we can, how do we get them to the customer? And so we had that stoppage. And then shortly after that, DC decided to part ways with Diamond, which great timing on that, and decided to have the two biggest online retailers, which is Discount Comic Book Service, as well as Midtown, become distributors for DC under two different companies, Lunar and UCS. And so as a retailer, that was a hard hit, because the way Diamond determined your discount on product was based on your total, you know, monthly order. Well, as you can imagine, the majority of that is made up between the two biggest players, Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
And so you take DC out of the mix, you know, you're ordering substantially less product.
Yeah, you're cutting, what, almost half? Not quite, because... you know, that's a significant chunk of your ordering with the amount of books they were putting out.
It was, and we were selective. You know, I with any new series, I always bounce it off my wife and then kind of bounce around different groups, right? Like, does this sound interesting? Does this not? You know, and so we weren't ordering the whole catalog. But yeah, it hurt, because a lot of what I try and do and what we try and do is kind of pick the best of what's being published and don't bring all the dreck out, because there's a lot of dreck. In the monthlies and the floppies, and then of course for the collected editions, we buy a lot of those, especially the omnibuses. So for those that are fans of those, you know that a lot of times they only get one printed. So if you want it, you got to order it.
You really do, don't you?
Yep, you do.
There was a couple I kind of thought, I'm not sure if I want it yet, and then next thing I know, you know.
They're out of print.
They're not as easily available anymore.
Yeah, they're out of print, and you get big markup demand in the, you know, secondary market. Yep. But so then on top of that, then Lunar decided that they were going to stop distributing DC product.
Oh, wow!
They announced, so that's probably, if you're not a retailer, you know, or you don't follow kind of the industry, Lunar pulled out and said, okay, we're not going to be a distributor anymore for DC. And there's conflicting, you know, stories on whether it was DC that said, we're just going to go to UCS, or if it was Lunar that said, we're not going to distribute DC products. So I had been a Lunar customer. And so now I had to then reset up a whole new account with UCS. Which, as you can imagine, right, makes all this, you know, the billing and invoicing and all that stuff behind the scenes fun, because it's like, well, we didn't know for quite a while, you know, well, what about the product we already ordered, and, you know, do I need to reorder it again? Do I not need to reorder it again? What about my discount? Blah, 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 blah. So it's been quite the year, and this is all, again, connected back to COVID, you know, kind of put all this stuff into motion behind the scenes. So it's the sooner we can get back to normal the better, you know, for everybody, you know, from the comics retailer to the comics reader to just life in general. I have a sip of my beverage here. Tasty. On a non-depressing topic, Wonder Woman 84 came out on Christmas Day. John, did you see Wonder Woman 84?
I did see it.
And?
And I am bucking the negativity on the internet. I enjoyed it. I liked it.
Nice.
I did.
So,
how about you?
Likewise. So... my wife and I struggle every year with what to get each other. And so we kind of had like a little come to Jesus at the beginning of December with like, should we just buy something, you know, for us, right? Like as a joint gift, right? Like enough with this trying to struggle, you know, with sneaking around and, you know,
don't cut your hair off to buy me a tie clip while I sell my best tie to buy you a beret, you know?
What was that? Gift of the Magi?
Yes.
I remember reading that as a kid. I said, okay, we had a 65-inch Panasonic plasma TV that we bought specifically because of Game of Thrones. And we had it, you know, like an LED TV before then, but all the night stuff looked like crap.
Uh-huh.
And so... you know, 7 years ago, I went shopping for a new TV, and I said, okay, what's the best TV out there, right, for watching movies that are, you know, dark and shows that are dark? And so it was plasma was it, right? And of course it was like, well, and plasma's on its way out. So if you want the best black levels, buy a plasma. So we've had this plasma TV for 7 years, and it's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Of course, now it's getting outdated.
Did you see the Starbucks cup on the table on that one scene?
Yes. I had to go back because I was like, wait, what was that?
Yeah, that's great. You know, as a quick tangent before you move on, it's, you know, not trying to distract, but I love it when that kind of stuff bleeds through a little bit.
Yeah.
So like I'm enjoying watching Dark Shadows on Amazon Prime, and I like it when
the original series,
all the original stuff. Yeah, it's all on Amazon Prime.
That's on there, huh?
Yeah. And there's occasionally, if you look close enough, you could see somebody, one of the backstage guys, standing in a doorway way in the back, or you see the shadow from the mics fall across everyone's face.
Right.
Or, when they close the door, and then you see the actor come and standing there waiting for their cue to walk through between the little groove in between the door. I love that stuff. Or there was one where... Barnabas Collins was looking out a window, and the camera zoomed in on him, but you could see the reflection of the cameraman in the pane of glass. It was great. I love that kind of stuff. So,
well, it's funny, right? Because I remember watching, it must have been on Netflix before it was now on Amazon, and I watched like a couple episodes, just me, you know. Wife doesn't have a lot of interest in reminiscing, you know, down memory lane for old 70s TV shows. But I remember as a kid, because that was on in reruns, right, when I was a kid, and it was scary, right? You know, as a kid, it was real scary, you know, and the whole mansion, you know, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo music, right, and it's spinning around. You watch it now, and it looks so fake. So fake. It's obviously a model, right? You know, it's not a real house somewhere. But it was never, I mean, people were watching those episodes when they aired on, what, a 20-inch TV? 22-inch. I mean, nobody could have predicted, oh yeah, but in the year 2020, people are going to be watching these on 75-inch TVs and super high definition.
Super high def, yeah.
Right. And that's the thing that's so funny. So what we ended up getting was, and this was because of Wonder Woman 84, I said, why don't we finally get a 4K TV, so, you know, when Wonder Woman comes out, you can watch it in all of its glory, right? Because a big thing that my wife and I liked to do was to go to the movies. That was our escape. When we could get someone to watch the kids, we, you know, have a quick dinner and go out to the movies. Well, obviously, we haven't done that for almost a year.
Plus, there are some films that you really want to see on a big screen, like Star Wars or, you know, big adventure scenes like that.
We like the experience of a theater, and I know that that's slowly dying. Maybe that's why we like it, kind of like comic books, right? Kind of the slow spiral. But there's something about sitting in a movie theater, right, with that, you know, I can't eat the movie theater popcorn anymore. It just does me in. But, you know, you got your big pop, you got your candy, you know, my wife always gets the popcorn, you know, and you sit down, and as soon as those lights start to dim, right, it's like, oh, it's gonna start. You know, here comes the trailers, and we're in it.
Certain way, you get the previews. Yep. You know? Yeah.
So that's what we did. We got a 75-inch Samsung QLED. I didn't do OLED because I guess those organic LEDs have the same potential issues that plasma has, where it can burn in or get image retention. So we got the QLED, and that's how we watched Wonder Woman.
Is this a curved, like, is this the curved one, or is that a different model that does
that? That is such a ridiculous thing.
Okay.
No, this is a full array, so it's not the crappy edge-lit stuff they had for the last few years, and that was, like, the new, quote-unquote, new technology when I bought the Panasonic 7 years ago. So this is full array, you know, a billion local dimming spots, and so the picture is like amazing.
Yeah, excellent.
And that's what we watched Wonder Woman on, and I agree with you. I thought the movie was pretty good.
We're going to try not to leave spoilers, but just in case there may be. So we'll try not to, but we might slip some things in because there's some things you just can't talk about. So
right.
just next few minutes.
Yeah, we'll do our best.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I was super excited. So wife was super excited because we got this TV just a few days before and got it all set up and, you know, watched the movie, loved it. The colors were amazing, you know, in the movie. I thought that the story, while this is where, you know, I think we've talked about this before. You kind of have to divorce yourself from the comics basis for the characters versus how they translate them on the screen.
You do, and I think it's with any of them, because even when you look at Avengers or the Justice League or the Flash, even on the CW, they're not the comic books that translated. And if people do see, well, yes, they are. Well, it's because the comic books adapted to cinema versions to make them more identifiable, not the other way around. So, yeah, you really do have to put it into, this is its own medium. It's kind of loosely based on a comic book or this idea. That's why I enjoy that stuff. I'm like, I'm not looking for the Wonder Woman that I read growing up or the Wonder Woman from George Perez or John Byrne. This is its own person.
Yeah, and to me, you know, kind of like, you know, the Superman movies or Batman movies, they're all amalgams. Sorry, you could tell liquor's kicking in. amalgams, right, you know, different comic elements, and they kind of squash them together. And in some cases, it works really well, like in the version of Wonder Woman on the big screen. You know, and sometimes it doesn't work very well. Daredevil with Ben Affleck.
What's not any good? Elektra.
Oh, yeah.
Catwoman.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ugh. So that's how we watched the movie. I thought it was really good. My wife liked it. You know, obviously, I stay quiet on comic stuff unless my wife asks. So, like, she asks. She asked a lot in, like, the...
is that how it was in the comics? Is that what she does?
Yeah. Who's this guy? What does he do? And, you know, I will only interject that stuff if she asks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, not trying to spoil anything. The Maxwell Lord actor, was it Pedro Pascal, the guy that plays Mandalorian?
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was really good. Mm-hmm. I don't know who that version of Maxwell Lord is because it's not the one from the comics.
It's not the one from the comics.
Like, at all. But okay.
You know, it's funny. He reminds me of the Bronze Age Toy Man more than anything.
Yeah, you know, in my head watching the movie, I'm going, WTF? Like, what is going on here? You know, and the whole thing with his ability and all that, you know, I was like, okay. You know, I guess they thought the comic powers were too hard for people to, I don't know, you know, understand or wouldn't like them or whatever. But I thought that was really weird. Kristen Wiig as Dr. Minerva. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yeah. You know, there's so much disappointment that I've seen, and I actually just posted on my Facebook. I'm like, hey, I watched it. I loved it. If you didn't like it, please move on. Don't add that to my comments. Because because most people, they're not even being criticized. They're just like, oh, it sucked. It sucked. It sucked. I'm like, you know, that's not helpful. I liked it because it really, to me, has elements and a vibe of the original Superman movie.
Yes. I'm glad you said that, because one of our great disappointments is that a lot of the superhero movies that I think my daughter Langley, who's 7, would really like, we can't show them to her because they're too violent.
Yeah.
You know, this is a little girl that gets too scared at, you know, nature shows, right? Like, ooh, it's too much. So going into this, you know, my wife's hope was, well, maybe I can watch this with Langley. And so 30 minutes in, you know, I looked at her and I said, well, nothing so far.
Yeah.
You know,
but it hasn't happened by 30 minutes in.
Yeah. And then you're thinking, okay, well, it's going to happen at some point. And you know, if you've seen the first Wonder Woman movie, it's like, yeah, totally not appropriate for a 7-year-old girl. Yeah. Even though that's who the movie should be marketed to and made for, it's not. Wonder Woman 84, I'm totally down to watch it with my daughter. And for that reason that you said, because it reminds me of the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. You got the bad guys, but they're not that bad. There's no blood and guts, but there's still quote-unquote high stakes. And, you know, as it's been criticized for, right, the kind of everything is wrapped up in a little bow at the end. That's perfect for kids. Kids need that closure.
Hey, I'm 55. It's perfect for me. There's so much darkness and violence in the world. Sometimes when I go into a movie theater or when I open up a comic book, I don't want what it would really be like. I want superheroes and colorful costumes that just would not translate into real life. You know, I don't.
Right.
And this is it. And it was fun. And
speaking of costumes, I was very worried about how Cheetah was going to look on the big screen. Very worried. I'm like, ooh, this could either be really good or it's going to be trash.
Uh-huh.
And I thought they did an awesome job adapting the comic book Cheetah to big screen.
I think they did too. One of the criticisms of Debbie's transition into Cheetah is like, oh, it's the same thing from Batman with Catwoman's, you know, like, so you know, it was great. I liked how, you know, you actually liked Debbie, and you were like, oh, I really don't want her to become a bad person, but when as she transitions in, you get it, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, and it was really good. I liked, and at one point I got to the point. So is this the Cheetah we're gonna get?
Right. Yeah. You know? Me too. Yeah, but before she transformed.
Before she really transformed, and apparently that's out in the previews, so we're not spoiling that version that's been shown already, her full transformation. So
see, and I hadn't seen that.
Neither had I. So I was like, so the whole movie actually was really a nice reveal to me, because I hadn't even seen any previews at all. So I was like, okay, yeah. So I got to enjoy it. I mean, I knew that, you know, Chris Pine came back as Steve Trevor, and I was like, and then when I found out how they brought him back, I was like, oh, too bad they didn't do the TV series thing where it's his grandson, you know, same actor, grandson.
Right.
which have been a nice little nod to the original series in a way.
Yeah, but, and so we get to see Cheetah adapted to the big screen. I thought she, you know, the special effects on how fast she is and how powerful she is, I thought was really well done, you know, making her look like an actual, you know, credible threat to Wonder Woman. And she, of course, you know, does a number on the try not to spoil anything, but the piece of Amazonian thing that she had, right? She really does a number on it. And
you know, I was surprised at that.
I was too. And then, of course, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we did get the cool mid-credit scene, which I know that's everywhere. What did you think of that, by the way?
I loved it. I was glad to see that finally happen.
It was long overdue.
Yes.
I liked how they integrated her into it.
Yeah,
you know, it wasn't like forced, and it wasn't like, oh, you know, they're a hot dog vendor. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I will say there was some weird special effect or CGI going on with her mouth, and both of my wife and I were like, "Why does her mouth look so weird?" I don't know if you picked up on that, but I mean,
I didn't though.
Okay, if you watch it again, you're going to be like, "Oh yeah, something weird going on."
All right.
But overall, I would definitely recommend it to people. I thought it was a good movie. It is not dark like the first one. I think it's totally appropriate, you know, for that 7 and up crowd.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, there's no over the top violence. Everything is resolved in the end. It has kind of that don't want to say happy ending, but it's you know, it weaves a moral right into the movie, right? Of you know, not to put it right on the head, but you know, be careful what you wish for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. and the consequences of your wish.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, everyone from Wonder Woman to the average person has to come to terms with that.
Yeah.
Because of what yeah. Maxwell Lord does. So I think it's perfect. So if you haven't seen it yet, watch it. If you've got, you know, kids that are 7 and up, I'd say you're totally fine letting them watch it.
Gal Gadot is a great
Gadot.
Is it Gadot?
It is Gadot.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
As my wife will correct me from time to time.
Sorry, Miss Gadot. She is a perfect person to step into the role after Linda Carter so beautifully has created it for all of us for, 45 years now?
Yeah.
and it's a great passing of the tiara. Of course, this already happened, but, you know, she is just doing a phenomenal job at creating the character and embodying it, and it's just really, really good. It's great to see that.
Yeah, and I hope DC doesn't listen to the naysayers, or Warner Brothers, I should say. You know, keep making movies like this.
Yes,
make them family movies. You know, that parents can take their kids to. They don't have to worry, you know, about blood and guts and, you know, over the top violence or like just, you know, things being too dark. You know, kids are still kids. A 7-year-old little girl, like I said, puts a pillow up in front of her eyes watching, you know, a Disney Plus, National Geographic show. You know, kids are still kids. Yeah. And I would love for them to have that same thing that I had, you know, watching those Christopher Reeve movies.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure my parents rolled their eyes almost out of their heads at, you know, some of the sequels. But to me, like, that was it.
Yeah. You know, and I'm one of the few people, and I realize it is completely corny, but I liked Supergirl. And yep. I also liked Superman Returns. With Brandon Roth,
yep.
Some of the circumstances around it are kind of like, the story elements, that's kind of like, whatever. Yeah. But I think Brandon did a wonderful job at embodying Christopher Reeve as the character, which was amazing and one great. And I like Supergirl. Helen Slater, you know, I mean, of course, back then it came out, we didn't have superhero movies like coming out twice, two or three movies a year.
Yeah, they didn't have $500 million budgets either.
No. And yeah, if I look at it now, I'm like, pretty corny, whatever. But, you know, it was still enjoyable.
But they were kids stuff, you know, and they were, you know, that's the thing that a little bit of conversation here and there with my wife about, like, every movie the kids watch is almost always animated. You know, so now this is one we can throw in there. Now, I don't know if she's going to sit through the whole thing. I mean, that's 2.5 hours. It is a long, so by the way, it's 2.5 hours. It's
but you know what? Long. That's what the pause button is for, right? You just say, I mean, it's funny. People complain about, it's 2.5 hours. I'm like, you will watch a 10-hour series and not complain about it.
Yeah, and I will get on my soapbox a little bit about this. People, you know, do the hemming and hawing. It's 2.5 hours. It's this, it's that. It's, well, guess what? Going to the movies nowadays isn't cheap. And so I feel like a lot of the movie producers out there feel like they have to give you, you know, a 2+ hour movie so that you don't walk out of there going, well, I spent $20-some on tickets, and then I spent another $20-some on popcorn and pop and candy. Yeah. So I got like $50 into this, and the movie was over before I even knew it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was different, you know, 20 years ago when most, like, action movies were, if you're lucky, you know, they were 90 minutes, but a lot of them were like 88, 87.
Yeah.
You'd go to that movie, and it was like bang, 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 you know. Not literally, but I'm almost, you know, because it's, you know, action movies, you know, and then it's over, it's done, you go home. But the ticket was like $3.
yeah. So, a third has been greenlit.
Yep. I just saw that today.
what stage it's in, don't know. Hopefully the director will come back. I forgot her name, sorry.
Is it Patty Jenkins?
Patty Jenkins. Hopefully she'll come back because she is just, I saw her at Comic-Con a couple years ago talking about directing, and she just loves this. So it's great when someone really has their heart in it. So hopefully they'll keep that. But David, let me ask you this. If they, or when they do a third Wonder Woman movie, do you think it would be interesting if they brought in Wonder Girl? And if they did, who would it be? Cassie Sandsmark, Donna Troy, or Drusilla? Do you know who Drusilla is?
Yeah, I feel like, well, we got a little bit of Donna Troy in the Nightwing, or sorry,
Teen Titans, yeah.
Yeah,
oh, that actress, amazing. Oh my gosh. Wow, she's so good at that role.
Yeah, well, and we could go into a whole big thing about how why hasn't Warner Brothers used some of their existing actors, you know, to play these roles in the movies? Mm-hmm. You know, like my wife and I were behind on The Flash, but we enjoyed watching that show. Same with Arrow. So Stephen Amell and was it Grant Gustin?
Grant Gustin, yeah.
They'd have been perfect. Transition those guys to the big screen, right, in a movie. You've got your Flash, you've got your Green Arrow. They're well known, you know, they know the characters. So I bring up Donna Troy because I think at this point we're going to have to get into some of the deeper mythology with Wonder Woman. If you're going to go for a third one, I would like to see, you know, the gods brought into it, but not in the way that they did in the first one. With Ares having the mustache and the armor. I think there's a way that they can do it because so often in the comics that plays a big role in, you know, the battle of the year, the month, whatever Wonder Woman is dealing with is somehow tied into the gods in some way.
They're a big part of the character of Wonder Woman and her ancillary cast. They're a character of themselves, of the genre. Yeah, I agree with you. It should be something around that.
Yeah, so I'd like to see that. I you know, I think that would be a natural segue then for like a Donna Troy to come in.
Yeah.
And kind of continue to expand it.
Okay.
I just threw
Drusilla in there as a nod to the TV series. Where they came up with that name, I have no idea. Ugh. For the character way back then. Maybe they didn't have the rights to all of the character names or something, but
maybe they were thinking of a different character but changed it, you know, just like they changed Bruce Banner, right? Because
yeah,
you know, Bruce seemed too feminine, so that's why it was named David Banner in the TV show. So other things in the multimedia space. So Mandalorian just wrapped up its season. What'd you think?
I'm not crying. You're crying.
Yeah.
I'm sad to see
Baby Grogu. Grogu. Yeah. I called him Ragu when she said his name. I was like, oh, it was like a forehead slapper, right? It's like, really? I said, you know, I looked at my wife. I said, what's his parents' names? Garlic and Herb?
Herb, there's an H.
Yeah, horrible name, by the way.
Yeah, they could have come up with something more interesting. I was really sad to see him go on. And, of course, sorry, folks, spoilers if you haven't seen it. Grogu has been such a
part of the show.
Part of the show. It's like,
it
would be like taking Din out and saying, okay, the Mandalorian, okay, yeah, we're just going to replace you. It's like, right. No.
You know? This was replaced.
Oh, yeah, right. The actor was going to
Pedro
was going to walk off or something, right? Yeah.
Egos clashed, I guess, for a while, but yeah.
Well, you know what? Half the time, he's not in the suit anyway, so it'd be like if Brendan Fraser left. I mean, like, okay, although, you know, Doom Patrol, although Brendan Fraser's voicing is amazing, but the guy who portrays Robot Man is great as well. So, I liked it. I haven't watched Clone Wars or any of the animated stuff all through. I know. So I have been scolded plenty of times. It just all came out at a time when I was like working, you know.
Yeah, I'm not going to credit. I watched it years after it was off the air when it was on Netflix. And I was like, oh, that's right. I remember the show. And then, you know,
so I have some homework. So when was it Ascani or Akasi?
Oh, Ahsoka.
Ahsoka, when she came on. Kano. Yeah. I was not as
You weren't giddy like the rest of us, like
yeah, exactly. I mean, it was just like, I mean, she was a cool character, and I like that. That whole episode that she was in was really a good episode.
She did a really good portrayal. So Ahsoka Tano is very big in the Clone Wars. Yes. She is. For those that don't know, she's Anakin's Padawan. For most of the Clone Wars series, until there's a falling out between her and the Jedi Council, which is then picked up again. So if you didn't know, that the series was ended prematurely when it was on TV. Uh-huh. And so they had a bunch of plots and scripts and even some storyboarding that was already done for the season that then was done for Disney Plus, which I think is like season 7. And that wraps up a lot of the threads that were left with the show ending prematurely. So yes, I would highly recommend watching the Clone Wars. I will say the first couple of seasons are a little rougher in terms of the animation, and that I had to get past. So don't poo-poo it too quickly. Okay. Just kind of let it roll, and it will get better. And it definitely fills in a ton of the gaps between, like, the prequel movies and then the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. And I find it actually more enjoyable than the movies, the prequel movies, because its main focus is on Obi-Wan and Anakin, as well as then the cast of characters around them, like. Mace Windu, you've got the Emperor, you know, the clones, the shades of gray, right? Well, you can understand how they think they're the good guys, even though we know they turn out to be the bad guys.
Okay, yeah.
Kind of thing. But as is tradition with everything that comes out now, I will say that season 7, the one that they did specifically for Disney Plus to wrap up the show properly, is dark. I mean, it goes to dark places.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, kind of, if you back to the young kid thing, might want to preview it first before you let younger kids watch it. I felt the same way it's going to be interesting to see where the show goes. They've already said we're not going to get anything until 2022. For The Mandalorian, because if you saw the big announcements after the finale aired, there's going to be the, what is it, John, the Book of Boba?
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. That'll come out first, I believe. And then we'll get more Mandalorian. I don't know where the show goes. I love the, I don't want to say one and done, but they're mostly one and done. So they had several episodes that were kind of like two-parters.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that. I like the, we're going to do this thing, and we're going to do it here, here, and here, and then we're off. You know, we hop in the ship and we fly away.
I agree with you. I agree with you. It was. I like that aspect of it as well. Yeah.
You know, and I like the peppering of the larger story, but I just like being able to watch a show and get a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm. And not have to worry about, oh, now I've got to watch 4 more episodes before I figure out what the conclusion is.
and so many shows kind of bank on that formula, right, of like, oh, well, we're just going to give you a little piece, and then you got to watch the next episode, and the next episode, you know, and that gets tiring, especially, you know, for those of us, you know, that are working, that have young kids and stuff like that. It's nice to sit down and just watch a show, enjoy it, you know, and it's like, you're excited for the next week because it's like, well, where are they going now? What are they going to run into this time?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think the comparison's been made that it's like a space Western. It totally is.
It totally is.
It's the bad guy of the week, you know, and there's the bigger bad out there that they eventually have to confront. But I like that. That formula works. It's simple. And as long as the writing holds up, I think that show could go for years and I would keep watching it.
Yeah. And the seasons are short enough that, you know, you're not stuck with 25 episodes, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so this is good. You know, it's yeah, I agree with you. I like that formula, too. The characters are pretty good.
Yep.
You know, you like them. I like Cara Dune, or Cara Dune. I think I love the Alderaan connection, so that brings it back.
You gave her character a lot of crap.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
You know,
I know the actress is causing some controversy with her personal politics and views and stuff, but I didn't know the character was, that people didn't like her character.
They said that her character was too wooden, that I think, and this is just my opinion, mine only, I think part of it is, I'm just going to say it, sexist, that because she's a more muscular woman, which, by the way, her body type to me is more of what Wonder Woman should look like, realistically.
Mm, yeah.
You know, but that, you know, that she's too kind of butch or too, you know, managed. I think there's a part of it that's just sexist.
Okay. I think she's a really strong, cool character. I like the way that Gina Carano portrays her. I would love to see a little bit more of the Alderaan story just because that does bring it in the original. My first Star Wars was
like
the original.
By the way. Did you?
Did what?
Did you do the teardrop tattoo?
I don't recall seeing it.
So she has a teardrop tattoo, and that's for survivors of Alderaan.
Oh, okay. Oh,
well, if you miss that, that's why she has that. And I thought, what a weird, you know, gangster tattoo to have, which is synonymous, right? If I'm remembering correctly, I think the teardrop is supposed to be like you killed somebody, like. You know, for our, you know, regular culture, I would have liked to have seen it been a different symbol than a teardrop, but that's what that was. That was, so she was a survivor of Alderaan. She was someone from Alderaan.
Yeah.
And that's their remorse, their forever tear, you know, for the loss of Alderaan.
Yeah. So, yeah, bringing in Boba and Fennec Shan was cool. I like that element of it. Yeah, this I actually think the second series is edged out better than the first season, just a little bit. I like the first season because it established the world, established where we are, brought in the characters and stuff, but this season I just really, really enjoyed, probably because the groundwork was laid, and so now I could just lay in and enjoy it rather than trying to figure out where we are. We're 5 years later, we're you know, learning these different things. The whole thing with the frog lady was great. you know.
Oh, just, and there was huge controversy, right, about, you know,
him eating
a laugh that, you know, Baby Yoda was eating her eggs.
Yeah, I know.
You know, which, give me a break, people. Seriously, I swear, people now will just latch on to anything. It's like, it's a TV show. Give me a break, you know. I like that. So, you know, go watch the Clone Wars, the
Rebels. Is it Rebels? Was another?
I didn't watch Rebels. I don't think it's required, you know, for this. I do think that the Clone Wars enhances your enjoyment of the Mandalorian because the people that he encounters, and what is that called? The Black Sword? No.
The Dark Sword?
The Dark Saber. The Dark Saber, is an element in the Clone Wars, and so you get, there's more meaning behind those things. Like when he meets, I always call her Starbuck because that's who she'll be to me forever.
Right. Bo-Katan.
Right. Which I think she's a great actress. I know people had issues with her casting as Bo-Katan too. And it's like, can we not have issues with everything? People?
Right. Yeah.
Again, you know, another, so this is where I get kind of the sexist bent, right? Because she's not, you know, wafer thin, you know, she's a little more muscular and she played, you know, kind of a similar part, you know, in Battlestar.
Yeah. Yeah. But it wasn't much different. I mean, if you want to know where Starbuck went for that year when she would disappear into the star, here she is.
Which is totally fine with me because it makes sense, right? I mean, if she's with other, you know, warriors, quote unquote, right?
Yeah.
She's not going to be the feminine princess, right, that you get in like Princess Leia, right? Or some of the other characters in Star Wars where it's like they haven't seen battle and death and, you know, all these other things. But anyway, so moving on. So the other big thing is that's coming up here is the final season of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And have you watched that show, John?
I watched the first season. I watched bits and pieces of the second season, but not the full episode 1 through episode 10. I'm familiar with it, but I got to say that I really enjoyed the actress who played Sabrina. It's not my Sabrina. And I'm not talking about the Adventures of Sabrina. I'm talking about the comic book Sabrina, because that's who I grew up with. But I loved her. I did like this show. So, yeah. So what was your thought about it?
It's another one that both my wife and I enjoy watching. It's not for kids.
Not for your seven-year-old.
Not for my seven-year-old. No. You know, it gets dark at times with, you know, sometimes I want it to go a little darker than it does because of just what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole running joke, right, of praise Satan. Oh, praise Satan. You know, you say, oh,
yes,
my God.
Yes, yeah.
Praise Satan.
And her cigarette on a little roach clip.
Well, you know, I had to point out to my wife, I said, if you notice anything that has to do with witchcraft or the witches or warlocks, it all seems like it's about 50 years or more in the past. The hot, you know, like every the accoutrements, the decor, the technology, it's all older. But when they're in the town and when they're at school, everything is modern.
Oh,
so it just tells you the witches and the warlocks and their whole society, they're kind of a step behind the modern world. And I think they did that intentionally, but it's not pointed out to you like in your face.
Yeah,
it's
one of those subtle things. Yeah, Michelle Gomez as Ms. Wardell or Madam
Satan.
Madam Satan. Oh man, she's an amazing actress.
Yeah, and she really chews up the scenes and definitely strikes you right as she could be one big badass, and you don't have a problem with it. You know, like. But she's, to me, she's kind of that chaotic neutral, right? You don't really know what you're going to get with her. You know, sometimes she sides with Sabrina and sometimes, you know, she sides with the devil, you know, or what her bigger ambitions are.
Her own self. So, And Michelle Gomez is great at doing all of that so that when she does side with Sabrina, you're like, oh, okay, I'm totally on board with you doing this. You're not that bad of a person after all. And then she goes off and she's scheming her way. You're like, you!
Totally screws her over in the next
season.
Yeah. So unfortunately, final season, Netflix has already said, this is it. They're only doing this last season and then the show's over. So I will shed a little tear for this. And I do have to, John, get on my comic book soapbox for a moment.
Okay.
So the show is based on, for those that are not paying close attention to Archie or haven't been in the last 7 or 8 years, Archie kind of spun these other, you know, I want to call them like sub-brands, but that's essentially what they were, sub-brands. So they had Afterlife with Archie where, you know, they're dealing with, you know, like basically take the Archie characters and plug them into a Walking Dead type universe. Afterlife with Archie, super good series, very dark, very adult oriented, just messed up stuff. But great writing, great art. Really high quality comics. Shortly thereafter, with the success, like within a year, they came out with Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which was the same way. It was under their Archie Horror sub-brand, you know, as a call out, right? Like, hey, this is not for kids. And that's directly the source material for the show. Now, why I'm on my soapbox is because Archie never finished the frickin' series. So they only came out with, it was either 7 or 8 issues, and it just ended. Now, Archie did that with a lot of their books that were the adult themed, like The Afterlife with Archie. They never finished it. They never finished Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And why? Because at the same time that these books were really starting to take off and people were taking notice, because, again, this is not an easy sell, right? If you were to, you know, if you were in a comic book store saying, hey, you should read this Archie comic, people are going to look at you and go like, yeah, right. They had started up the big success of Riverdale, right? So this TV show on the CW sucked up all their bandwidth, and they basically just dropped publishing these books. So to this day, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which I still recommend, there's a trade paperback, you should read it. It's gory, it's great. Same with Afterlife with Archie, gory, great, both adult, you know, themes and concepts, but they never finished them. And they had such an opportunity there to do something that was totally different from what they're known for. It could have fallen completely on their face, but it didn't. And it's just really disappointing as a comic fan to have waited every month to get that new issue of Afterlife with Archie or Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, to have them just be like, eh, we're going to go do this TV stuff over here.
Mm-hmm.
See ya. So yeah, I have a little bit of bone. I don't hold it against the TV shows. I've never watched Riverdale. I don't really have any desire to. I don't know if you ever watched it.
My husband watched it, and I watched a few episodes, but it didn't really intrigue me. It was basically teen angsty.
Yeah.
Nothing like Sabrina. I mean, Sabrina at least had some of those elements, but you had this whole supernatural Constantine type thing going on. So that was always really cool. But Riverdale to me just was didn't really interest me.
So off my soapbox. Again, removing myself from my anger at Archie. If you want some good, you know, quality horror stuff to read, pick up Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Like I said, it's in a trade. Same with Afterlife with Archie. You know, just be prepared that, you know, they do get violent.
Wow.
And
who would have thought?
I know. Nobody did. You know, when they came out, I'd have to go pull it up, but I want to say, like, Afterlife with Archie, the first issue, you know, as you can imagine, had a really small print run because people were like, ugh, you know, a new Archie comic, what is this going to be? And, oh, it's supposed to be adult. I want to say that thing went to, like, 5 or 6 printings.
Wow.
Because word just kept getting out, like, hey, this is really good. This isn't, you know, the Archie you know. And just kept getting reprinted.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because, like, Archie is, you know, one of the oldest products. I mean, I just looked it up. I thought it was 1942 when Archie was introduced, but it looks like it was 1939. So the year that Superman came out. So that is a long running set of characters and publications and all of that. So that's an amazing legacy.
It is, and I really thought, you know, when these series came out, because I think Afterlife with Archie was like 2013, because I know for sure Chilling Adventures with Sabrina was 2014. Within a year, right, they had 2, you know, hit comic books, and it had been a long time, right, since Archie had a big hit, other than, you know, the death of Archie, right, which everybody was like, oh my God, they're going to kill Archie. It's like, well, come on, we've been there, done that, okay? He's not immune to being resurrected whenever they feel like it.
He'll get better.
Yeah, yeah, don't worry.
I'm not dead yet.
Oh, she turned me into a newt.
You don't look like a newt. I got better.
All right. Well, to wrap up this first episode of Cocktails and Comics, I thought we would reminisce a little bit about comics that got away, right? Or comics you had an opportunity to get, but you didn't. And so the first question is, John, can you think of a comic you had an opportunity to buy, but you didn't? And now looking back on it, you kick yourself, wishing you would have bought the comic.
Yeah. There happened to have been, and please don't judge me, people. Back in the 90s, I was looking, I was scanning through, and Home Shopping Network came on, or the other one, QVC, and they had a comic book segment. I was like, oh, I'll stop at HSN or QVC for a comic book, sure. And they had one of, this was in the days of the foiled,
gosh,
the little foiled cover. It wasn't not it was the, I think it was the hologram when the X-Men and the Generation X were crossing over, and they had like that 3D or that
like it was like a trading card size,
like a trading card that was part of the cover. And they had that, and it was signed by Stan Lee, and I didn't pick it up. I thought about it, but it was like $80 at the time. And I was like, but I was also thinking, you know, hey, I'm an adult, you know, I could spend this much money.
I got better things to spend that $8.
$80, yeah. But I was like, I don't know. You know, I batted it around, and then I just decided not to for whatever reason. I don't know why. I wish I would have picked that up just for the signature.
Well, maybe you can do some eBay quick searches for Stanley, QVC, or HSN. I'm sure you'll find something.
I actually do happen to have his signature in a trade paperback. Ooh. It is a collection of X-Men, giant size X-Men 1 and 94 through 97 or 98. And it's one of those ones that were printed in like the early 90s. I think it's called Milestone trade paperbacks. And he signed it. I don't know, I might have got it on eBay, or someone might have handed it to me. It's actually addressed to somebody, but it is Stanley's signature. So I'm like, I do have Stanley's signature on a trade paperback. So, an X-Men one at that. So
nice.
How about you, Dave? David,
what
got away that you wish you had now?
Well, the longer time goes on, the more it hurts, John. It hurts a lot. And I feel for those folks which are now like, you know, grandmas and, you know, grandpas, right? Who are like, oh, I remember Action Comics and Superman. I read that and we threw them away.
Yeah.
You know, because that's just what they did. That's just what they did.
Or so trade for marbles, or
yep. So mine is, and I've talked about this before, I got big into comics, you know, when I was 10, 11, 12, so late 80s into the early 90s. And one of the characters that I liked, but he wasn't really around a lot. He had like, he'd get like that random Marvel, like one-off special, you know, that they do, was Moon Knight. And so in the back issue bins, I'd pick up, you know, Moon Knight whenever I saw the old 80s series, you know, I had like the Sienkiewicz covers and that most of us are familiar with now. But at that time, right, they weren't really anything special, right? They were 50-cent comics. Well, on the wall, I remember this vividly, on the wall at my local comic store, you know, was a Werewolf by Night 32. And this was not unusual for them to get them in, right? So they would have it up on the wall. I'd be back the next week. It'd be gone. Another one would be up. And it would be between, I would say at that time, it was like $40 or $50. I remember to me, it seemed like a lot of money, you know, as an 11 or 12 year old, right? Who I only got cash either by mowing the lawn, right? Shoveling the driveway, doing chores. And even then, right? It was like, Sting City. And so to me, that was a lot of money. Now, if I were to try and buy that Werewolf by Night 32, now mind you, this is 30 years in the future, it's just a ragged out copy. John. Just a ragged out copy. $500.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
If you wanted one. Now, I'm not saying that the ones that were up on the wall were like a near mint, but you could, you know, at that time they weren't that old, right? So they're 10, 15 years at most. Yep.
Yeah. Probably very good condition.
Yeah, very fine near mint.
Yeah.
If I wanted that same type of quality now, so just do a quick eBay search. You can do a CGC 9.0, which would be considered a very fine near mint. $3,300.
Ouch.
Want a 9.2? $4,000.
Now, you realize when your daughter is your age, she's going to look back and say, my dad could have got that for $3,300. That would have been a steal.
Well, look at, you always wonder, right? You know, and I'm sure people did then, you know, about like, oh, you know, you always see somebody will post an ad every so often from like a 70s comic, right, with Mile High showing, you know, Action Comics, right, or Detective Comics, you know, key issues, and they're like
three
pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
To what they are now. Yeah. You know, is that going to stay? Because, I mean, a high grade near mint Hulk 181, that's like a $10,000 book.
Yeah.
You know, is it going to stay a $10,000 book? I don't know. Maybe. You know, what's driving the Moon Knight frenzy is because.
What is that? Because I never thought of Moon Knight as being like a really popular character. I mean, I always actually kind of thought when I was growing up, he was kind of boring, but that's not to say he is. It's just like, I didn't find the attraction to it. But
I know some people think he's Marvel's version of Batman.
Yeah. So,
which to an extent he kind of is.
Yeah. So what is it? I mean, why is suddenly Moon Knight so popular? I mean, he seems so obscure.
Well, for years, people have thought that he was going to pop up in the Marvel movies. So that has been driving prices up over the last, you know, I'd say 4 years or so.
Yeah.
But it was announced this year that he is going to get a Disney Plus series.
Ooh, there you go.
And of course, then that just set the world on fire.
Yeah.
Because there's been rumors that Oscar Isaac could be playing Moon Knight. I think he'd be a great Moon Knight. You know, I'm sure there's a ton of actors we could think of if we sat here and thought long enough about, you know, who would we want to play Moon Knight or Mark Spector, more specifically.
And he would. I've just pulled him up to take a look, and yeah, he would be a great Mark Spector.
He kind of looks like him.
You know? He does. when you think about Moon Knight number one, when I think about Moon Knight number one, those early series, because my buddy, one of my friends, he loved Moon Knight when we were growing up. So I worked at a Stop and Shop thing, and we had a spinner rack. And whenever Moon Knight came in, I had to pull it real quick so that David could have it. Hi, David. So David could have Moon Knight, because he thought Moon Knight was very super cool. So I used to always buy the books and then give them over to him. And yeah, Oscar Isaac would be, he looks like Mark Spector.
I think he has the acting chops too to play this psychologically tormented character that Mark Spector is. That's you know, they're going to have to get somebody that has some acting ability to play kind of the many facets of Moon Knight. So that's the one that got away. Of course, I do own a copy of Werewolf by Night 32, but it is in the Werewolf by Night omnibus that Marvel put out years ago.
Yeah, I have it in the Essential okay. Werewolf by Night number 2.
By the way, they are putting out a Moon Knight omnibus. It's out on the shelves next week. That includes that Werewolf by Night 32 and 33. It also has his Marvel Spotlight appearances, so he was in Werewolf by Night, and then he popped up in the Marvel Spotlight, so it's got those. It's got like 4 or 5 Defender issues. It's got some Spider-Man stuff, some 2-in-1, and then his 1980 series in its entirety, and some other issues in there as well. I forget. I mean, it's going to be a big one. It's like, you know, one of those 1,000-pagers plus.
Yeah, that sounds like a great collection of books in there. One thing that would be cool was, and we talked about this beforehand, but just to bring it up, is if probably they would Marvel will be releasing a facsimile or a True Believers version of that issue.
or maybe Moon Knight number one, but let's hope Werewolf by Night, because wouldn't that be fun to be able to read it in its entirety?
I think I've talked about this before, but I'm a huge proponent. I mean, the True Believers are nice because they're a buck, right? And so it allows somebody to pick up some of these classic issues that are way out of the stratosphere for price, or just simply they're just a book that you wouldn't want to read at this point. You know, it'd be nice to, we'd all think we'd like to flip through like an Amazing Fantasy 15, but you know, you'd be shaking the whole time. You know, like, don't rip the paper, don't get your oils on it. You know, like,
well, David, I got to actually hold an Action Comics number one at Comic-Con a couple years ago.
Hate you.
Somebody had it, and they let me, and they had it, and the owner of it is a friend of my old boss, who now runs a magazine, and he's like, "Hell yeah, you know, I've got this," and I was like, "What?" I'm like, "Can I touch it?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he let me hold it. I was like, "Oh my gosh." And yeah, I was kind of like, this, don't sneeze, don't faint, don't drop it, don't do anything. It was cool.
Yeah. So I'm a huge proponent of the facsimile editions, which, if those of you don't know, facsimile editions are different from True Believers in that facsimile editions are reprinted directly as they originally were. So reading a facsimile edition is just like reading that original comic, but without worrying that, oh my gosh, what if I turn the page too hard and I put a tear in the bottom part of the paper or something. So you get everything, the ads, you know, if there were letter columns, that's in there. And typically all that stuff is stripped out of a True Believers. You know, you're just getting maybe a house ad or two of whatever Marvel is pushing at the time, or DC, which really doesn't do the True Believers. They have started to. They call them their DC dollar books, like they reprinted the first Harley Quinn, you know, Batman Adventures number 12, which is another one of those, you know, hundreds of dollars for just a rat copy. But that would be nice for someone like me to get that as a facsimile and, you know, put it in the collection. And it's like, well, I don't have an original yet, but it's a placeholder.
It's there, and now you at least have the original book, although it's not an original book. And those facsimiles are fun. I got Giant Size X-Men number one as a facsimile because I don't have the original. And I recently picked up Secret Origins 17 with the Huntress in it. And I had the story in my Huntress Dark Knight trade, but to have the facsimile is really cool.
Yeah, it's a nice placeholder, especially if, like, you know, like we're talking about with the Hulk 181. Unless you have one now, you're gonna go broke, right? Yeah. Trying to get, you know, a copy that you know, is not all ratted out or ragged out, and, you know, something that you can enjoy. So last question before we wrap up for tonight is, and John, if you don't have one off the top of your head, that's okay. A comic that you sold, which you wish you hadn't. So we talked about one you had the opportunity to buy, but you didn't. Do you think of a comic that you sold, or maybe traded, because I think you've talked on the show about trading comics with your neighborhood friends when you were younger. Is there one that sticks out that, man, you wish you hadn't sold it or had traded it, never got it back?
Well, when I went into the military, my uncle took my comic book collection and was supposed to keep it safe, and something happened to it. He says someone broke into the house and stole it. I think he sold it and sold them all off and didn't, you know, but...
That was your whole X-Men collection?
So it was all my X-Men. I had like early editions, like all the way down to like the 20s of X-Men.
And I think you had mentioned on another show you stopped like actively collecting like around issue 200 or something, didn't you? But you had like a full run basically up and...
Most of the books, definitely. I basically started collecting X-Men around 107, and I had a few spotty ones down to I had X-Men 98. I think I had X-Men 105. It was hard to get some of those in those years.
Right.
And Giant Size X-Men number 2 I had, but I had like all of the fill-in issues from 67 through 93. All of those reprint issues I had. Yeah, I had a lot of those old X-Men. And at the time, you know, I didn't think my uncle would lie to me, but as I gotten older, I'm like, I kind of think maybe. I don't know.
Somebody needed some money.
Yeah. So
ouch.
That's my disappointment.
So mine is,
you?
Yeah, kind of similar to yours. There's a ton that I could rattle off that I wish I hadn't sold. You know, there's always that hindsight is 2020, right? You know, it's like, oh, it's, you know, the book you paid $2 for is now worth $50. Is it, you know, it's like the stock market, right? Is it like, is now the time to sell?
Yeah.
Or do I hold on longer? More often than not, people, I'll just tell you, as someone who does this for a living, sell it. Take your winnings and walk away and don't ever think about it.
Just ask anyone who bought all 20 copies of any issue of X-Men in the 1990s.
Oh. Oh my God. Yeah. Or like the first issue of McFarlane Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that was going to be a huge, people are going to put their kids through college with that. Just like the Death of Superman issue.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're slowly climbing up, in all fairness, you know, but you're talking like they're $5 or $6 books, you know. Death of Superman's gone up a little more, but anyway, so my big regret is, and I don't know exactly how old it was, so there's six kids on my dad's side, and my dad's youngest brother had finished college, you know, was off in the working world. And I remember being at my grandmother's house, and she had boxes and boxes, long boxes of comics in the garage.
Hmm.
And they were all my Uncle Corey's, and that Corey didn't want them. And so we could take any comics we wanted or not. Now, to put this in perspective, when Corey was a kid, it was 60s and 70s comics.
Mm-hmm.
All of it. I had no idea at that age. You know, so it would have been before I was like actively buying them, but it was like nowadays I would like, you know, if my, you know, my grandpa called and said, yeah, I got all these old comics from Corey, I'd tell him, you know, it's a 2-hour drive. I'd say, I'll be there in 30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, don't touch them.
Don't tell anyone else.
Right. Yeah. Don't do anything. I'll be there. So I have no idea what was totally in there. I remember just going through and picking out, you know, the ones that looked cool to me at the time. So I want to say this is probably like mid-80s. And if you think he had already graduated from college, right? So, you know, all 60s and 70s comics, the stuff that is now really collectible,
yeah,
that probably had some really good stuff in there, all gone. So after all the grandkids got to go through and pick out what they wanted, you know, and granted, there's a lot of us, because you can imagine with, you know, six kids, and then they're all married and they all have their kids. You know, everybody took a few comics. Everything that was left went to the, you know, paper recycler.
Yeah.
All gone.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe my Werewolf by Night 32 was in there. And I could have had it.
It slipped from your grasp.
There's probably 10 copies of Fantastic Four number 1.
It slipped into the abyss like Jack after the Titanic.
Yep. Well, you know, everything has its time, and you know, things become collectible because at the time they're not. Right. So number one rule of collecting: if it says collectible or collectible issue or collectible anything on it, it's not.
Yeah.
Run away. It's like, you know, you put baseball cards right in your bike tires because it made it sound like a motorcycle.
Yes.
You know, with the clothespins.
Yeah, we played with our toys. We opened them up and took them out of the boxes.
Yeah,
I don't know how many Star Wars action figures were missing lightsabers and capes by the time me and my brother were done with them in the 80s.
Oh, that was me with Masters of the Universe. So all the He-Man and then the Transformers figures, right? You know, inevitably all of them would find their way into the sandbox at some point.
Yeah.
So, you know, they all got, you know, used and abused and played with until, you know, there was nothing left.
That's right.
You know, it always amazes me, right? I'm sure you do, you as well, that, you know, you get these longtime collectors where these, you know, guys and mostly guys, let's be honest, you know, they have their toys from when they were a kid and they're in their original packaging and they didn't even play with them.
I don't know how that happened.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that'll do it for our first Cocktails and Comics. I enjoyed my cocktail. Hopefully you did too.
Oh, yeah. I more enjoyed the conversation. So,
yeah.
I was going to say, if any of our listeners want to share why they liked Wonder Woman or thoughts on The Mandalorian or thoughts on Sabrina, drop us a line or tell us what comic got away.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, send an email at thirddegreeburn@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Yeah, I would love to hear, I'll rattle off the questions again. So the first one was a comic that you had the opportunity to buy, but you didn't. And then the second one was a comic you sold, which you wish you had not.
Yeah.
I've heard some whoppers over the years, and we've obviously run out of time, but, you know, everybody's got the one that got away or the one you wish you hadn't sold. But yes, this was a great little over an hour chatting together. We got to have a cocktail. We talked COVID. We talked movies. We talked TV shows. We talked about comics. Oh, it doesn't get any better than that.
All kinds of fun stuff.
Right.
I'm with a good friend.
Right. Well, that'll do it for tonight's show. If you like it, send us a message on that too. If you like just these little chat sessions, let us know. So with that, John, good night.
Good night, David. Thanks, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the Tutu Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.